From WBEZ Chicago, I'm Greta Johnson, and this is the Nerdette Book Club. It's just like a regular book club, except you don't have to share your snacks. It is the month of April, and our selection is Marie-Helene Bertino's strange and fantastic novel, Beautyland, which is easily one of my favorite books this year. It is about Adina, a girl born in Philadelphia in 1977. And when she is still a kid, she realizes she's actually an alien in a human body. And her mission is to relay insights about Earth's inhabitants to her bosses via fax machine. That is all I'm going to say for now, but this is going to be a spoilery conversation. So if you have not read the book and you don't want to know what happens, go listen to our spoiler-free author interview, which is already in the feed. Otherwise, we are so glad to have you, and I am very excited to introduce you to our guests for this one. With us today is the author of the novel The Sleepwalker's Guide to Dancing and the graphic memoir Good Talk, Mira Jacob. Mira, hello.
Hello.
Full disclosure, you are in fact friends with Marie-Helene Bertino, correct?
I know, I was going to say that. I was going to have to tell you guys I am in fact good friends with Marie, and we are going out Saturday night. Or I could say I am not friends with Marie-Helene Bertino. I have never met her. I just happen to love this fucking book. No, but it's, you know what? I will just also say that if I weren't good friends with Marie, I would go and find her and make her
right?
my friend after
yes.
reading this book.
Yes, I completely agree with that. Also here is Molly McGee, who wrote Jonathan Abernathy, You Are Kind, which was our January book club pick. Molly, welcome back.
Hello. I do not know Marie, and I am worse off for having read this book.
Well, that's okay. You can hunt her down. It's fine.
I will.
She loves that.
Please let her know.
Okay, so I would love for us to start with a voice memo from a listener. We got a number of them this time around, which I love. This is Erin, and she is explaining why this is her favorite book club book ever, which I love. Let's listen.
To me, it exemplifies why I love science fiction and fantasy books, because I think there's something about having something that's not quite human in a book that can show us how beautiful it is to be human. And for this book, the last monologue where she recites all of her observations on humanity at the book event was just beautiful. That monologue had me in tears. And interestingly, it reminded me of the end of the Barbie movie. And I mean that in the best possible way. That also had me in tears. Both, again, just exemplify all the beautiful things about humanity and being human. So thank you so much for this pick. I am really happy to have this book on my shelf.
I love that sentiment so very much for a number of reasons. Partly, I have to shout out the use of the word beauty twice because I have a feeling we're going to use it very many times too, because it is just like a beautiful fucking book. But I would love to start by asking both of you how the genre worked for you. I mean, obviously, this is like a very literary book. I hesitate to call it science fiction, and yet it is very much about an alien. Molly, you wrote a book that's like in an in-between space as well. What do you think?
I wish you would have started with Mira first, because what I'll say is I'm not a big believer in genre segregation.
Sure.
Yeah. I think like use whatever technique you point across. And for me, one of the things about this book, if I had to label it as any genre, I would label it as actually a poetry. It felt like poetry while I was reading it. But I do love the way that she used the alien conceit to help draw attention to things that pass our notice on a day to day.
Same. Yeah, it was beautiful. There we go. I used it. What do you think, Mira?
You know, I think I agree a lot with Molly in terms of, did you call it genre segregation? I like that. I like the use of that. I really believe in that. I like the use of that. But I also, I don't, go in big for genre as much as I think that the story tells you the rules of its world, right? Like you're writing to own a feeling, to set out something, and the world has to sort of bend with you so that you can make that feeling possible. And I feel like that's what was done in this. So many times I felt like my humanity was reimagined by this world because it was seeing me and my predicament in a way that made me feel so much less alone. And the idea of being an alien and the idea of alienation, I think we are all so often feeling like aliens on this planet. I think so many of us are so isolated, especially post-pandemic. I don't know that anyone feels as connected to each other or just the world as they used to. And I felt like there was a way in which this walked I know books start, and certainly this one did long before, it started long before the pandemic, but there was a way in which it walked right into that heart space and gave it a place to really flourish. And I felt so grateful for it because it created the exact world I needed.
Yes. Gorgeous. It was funny. I think it was when we did the Vaster Wilds, the Lauren Groff book for book club. And MJ Franklin, who is an editor at the New York Times Book Review, was on. And he talked about how his favorite sort of book is just sort of like a person walking through the woods thinking about things. And I was much more like plot, 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 give me plot. And it was funny because Vaster Wilds, I think, did a little of each really nicely. But it was funny, then I gave a copy of Beautyland to my mom and she read it and she was like, Greta, I'm really surprised you liked this so much because it definitely has like person walking around thinking about things vibes, which I thought was really interesting because like there is plot here, but it's not really about that either.
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually with you. I'm like, hey, I love a page turner. I love to be carried along.
Yeah, I want shit
along.
To go down.
I love there to be drama and intrigue. But you know what I also love? I love a book to read slowly in the morning while the sunlight comes through and I'm drinking a cup of tea. And I feel like this book is a perfect book for meditation. It asks you to slow down and really consider the type of life that you're living and the life that people around you are living that you have no access to.
Do you think that's because of the cut of the sentences?
I think so. I do. I think it's the rhythm. And the use of, there's a lot of strange word choices that help to actually make the reader feel alienated. And I think that makes you have to slow down while you're reading.
Yes.
I think that's so true. I mean, one of the things that when you were just saying that, I was thinking of because the sentences sort of lay so beautifully on the page and because she is a very spare writer. And if you talk to her, obviously, but also even in interviews, she talks about how she writes almost haikus at first and then builds up. And I feel like that's very apparent because it feels to me that every word is chosen and not in that impossible way where it's like, oh, I must consider each sparkling dewdrop of word, but rather like it's telling you something that is so particular that you land on it in a way that makes everything feel a little bit new and a little bit different, but like the best art does. And I also felt in that way, I think that it felt meditative for me as well.
Yeah, this was, so I actually listened to this one, which, you know, then you don't notice quite as much like the sparseness on the page, but it still works really beautifully. I think kind of Molly, to your point around it being poetry, because you really can just listen to it. And I will say, I was also very glad to have a hard copy with me because so like more often than in any book I've read in a long time, I think I was like, oh shit, that sentence is beautiful. I must find it in the text so that I can mark it and fold the page because I love it so much.
I love that.
Okay, so can I tell you guys, I did both. I read it and
did
I
you?
Also listened to
awesome.
It. Yes. Uh-huh. So I read it first and then I listened to it when I was driving through New Mexico on like multiple, you know, hour, you know, 5 hour long days. I'm from New Mexico and Marie also teaches in New Mexico and it was so amazing to listen to this book with like the New Mexico landscape flying by because it does feel like another planet. I don't know if you guys have been, but I mean, I feel like I grew up on another planet. And so it really was, I was like, I'm really feeling this. I'm deep in my alien zone right now.
That's so cool. That's funny because I feel like listening to it even while walking around in Chicago also totally worked though, because it you know, so much of it is about like existing in spaces that are bigger than you, whether that is an alien landscape or an urban one.
Can you say a little bit more about that, existing in spaces that are bigger than you? Because I feel like that's an enormous part of this.
Oh, gosh. Well, thanks for putting me on the spot.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I think it's kind of to the point that Aaron had with that voicemail around like the minute you get even half a degree separation from what it means to be human, all of a sudden you can actually say a lot about what it means to be human. And I think, you know, it's also, I think, Molly, to your point around it being meditative, I think what's so beautiful about this book, and, you know, Marie talked about it in my interview with her too, is it is so utterly quotidian, right? Like what she is pulling out are like the tiniest, simplest details, but to be able to really look in it and look at and examine them closely and carefully is such a gift that I think we so often forget to give ourselves because we're in the midst of whatever craziness of our days, you know?
Yeah, I think that's true. It's a book that asks us to pay attention.
Yes.
And what's so crazy about that is that you never realize when you stopped paying attention. It isn't until someone says pay attention that you realize your attention has wandered. And so in that way, beginning to read this book is kind of like, oh, a reminder of how much we're asked to be on autopilot.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then what's the point of any of it, actually?
Exactly. It's just such a tender reading experience. I definitely cried while I was reading it. I was like, I didn't expect for this to... Actually, that's not true. I did expect for it to hit really hard because I'm a big fan of Marie's other work. I especially loved Parakeet. So I've been a fan for a long time.
That's so cool. I love to hear that because I kind of randomly was like, Molly, I feel like you'd be really good for this one. So
and
I'm
you
glad
were,
it
you know what?
Out.
You were right.
Let's listen to another voice memo. Here is Cassandra in Pittsburgh.
I am halfway through Beautyland and I'm completely smitten. I've read lots of Nerdette recommendations over the years, but I think this one is landing as my favorite. It's profound, it's heartbreaking, it's genuinely hilarious. And one plot point that stood out to me was when Adina is on the boardwalk and she sees t-shirts where men are like lamenting how annoying their wives are. It was just something small in the writing. She didn't make a big deal out of it, but that it hit me in my gut. And there are so many parts like that throughout the book.
I love that. I think that speaks to the idea of attention too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, do y'all have any like specific favorite like passages or lines from this book? One that I keep thinking about is when Adina's in college and she's asked to cover the lacrosse game.
Yes.
And her like editor, whoever it is, like reads back to her what she wrote. And he's like, you didn't even name the teams or the score. And she's like, well, I figured they would know that part. I just loved it.
That absolutely. I think one of the things that I loved, I also caught the t-shirts moment, but I feel like there's so much great stuff about the way that women earthlings exist that's just sort of pulled into little moments. So like there's this moment where there's the motorcyclist in the television commercial, and then I don't know if you guys remember this, she like pulls up, removes the helmet, and then she sort of shakes out this long hair so it sort of reveals herself to be a woman, and then she writes back to her superiors, motorists are not expected to be women. Women who ride motorcycles do not want you to know they are women. Women have long hair. Like, just see what I mean? Like, all the collective details. And then later, there's this moment, and I'm going to botch the line, but I feel like it's something like, it's after she fools around with that boy, and it doesn't go that well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up.
Yes.
Mushroom penis guy. Anyway, but there's this moment afterward where her reflection is, how could she have known what a girl's laughter does to a boy?
That was my favorite line.
Yeah. Oh.
Yes.
Just next level.
Yes.
And then, well, what's so beautiful about that scene is she is truly, she's not behaving maliciously. She's just like genuinely naive. And then she suffers friendship repercussions because of it. The girl group that she was with at the time sort of is like, oh, you can't dance with us, which I thought was so accurate and so petty and so stupid that it was just like so perfectly observed. I think a lot of writers would want to massage that moment into one of logic. But in the text somewhere, I think the narrator says to expect humans to behave logically is actually like not, it's going to be problematic, or I can't remember the beautiful way she put it. But, and I think that's so true for most of the book. There are so many small moments where you expect the people in response to do one thing and then they do something slightly lamer. and that just feels really true to me.
Yeah. I found another moment that I would love to groan about if you're up for it, which is when she's on a plane. I think it's for the first time, right?
Yeah.
And she's like nervous about it. And the flight attendant like comes and checks in on her. And he says, after reaching cruising altitude, nothing can force a plane out of the sky. So what are you afraid of? Wind or engine failure? And she goes, staying the same forever. And it's just like, it's just so good.
Oh God. Yes. Right. And it's just, and it's so, it brings you to a particular emotional pitch with such yes. clarity that you're like, I've been here before, but I always thought I was alone.
Yes.
You know what though? It's making me think of is, you know, what made me laugh out loud is, do you remember when she gets, high? And they just, and she and Dominic have this like sort of talk, and then she goes back and then she faxes her superiors, but she's high and she's like, yeah. She's out of pride. It's like, trees are the earth's hair or something.
Yes. And
like,
yes.
The same words for thaw and de-thaw, they mean the same thing. Like, it's just like all these things. And they basically fax back like, your observations are mediocre. Are you ill?
It's so good. Okay, let's take a quick break and then we will discuss more about Beautyland in just a minute. Let's listen to another voicemail. Here is Anne.
I was born in 1979, so my timeline and Adina's timeline are very similar. And it was really interesting to read her perspective on so many memories that exist in my own life, like REM or the movie Boomerang, but then also really significant historical events like 9/11. And it just reminded me how there are so many threads that make up the fabric of a human life. And it really made me appreciate how the threads of a human life can be so diverse.
I think that's a really interesting observation, partly because I have a friend who was also born in 77 and she read this and she was like, oh, this hits so exquisitely. I was born in 85 and it still worked, but it is really interesting to think about, you know, reading this from the point of view of someone who is of the same ages as Adina. I can't imagine how profound it would feel then, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just a few years older than Adina. So all of this is like, just, it's like the girls in the class below me, you know, it's like
that.
Watching like my kid's sister, like, what is she thinking? What is she feeling? But in this, but also Adina, let's be clear, is nobody's kid sister, right? Like that's also, there's like a way in which she is deliciously and delightedly and decidedly nobody's kid sister. She is, you know, one of these things that I think is so wild when people, so I have a son, and one of the things that people always say is this, like this sort of compliment of like, oh, you've done such a good job with him. And I'm like, no. Thank you. Also that he has nothing to do with me. Like he was just born his own thing. And like, I'm sort of delightedly alongside trying to, you know, make sure he doesn't like go off the edge of a cliff. But that's, I firmly believe that people are just born their own thing. But Adina is just born herself, and so singularly, and her aloneness feels very profound. Her like, or with, I would say like there's the piercing moments with her mother, and with Tony and with Dominic, but there's a way in which she doesn't feel like anyone's sibling particularly.
That's beautiful. I love that.
Does that feel that way to you guys?
She definitely felt like an only child.
But yeah, I think there is also, and I wonder how much of it is like being the alien with the mission, but there is always a sense, even as she's figuring things out, that she does know who she is, I think.
Yes, because it feels like she's walking toward herself. Like you were saying that there's, it's not a capital P plot, but I do feel like what I'm watching And what I'm waiting for is a person who is slowly walking toward herself across a book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really beautiful. Yeah. Well, okay. I'm going to say something dramatic.
Great.
Which is that I think the struggle that Adina faced during this book was that everyone kept expecting her not to be herself. And so they were always surprised that she remained who she was. And so I don't know if there was movement towards herself, but rather everyone else moved away from themselves as they became older. And Adina stayed sort of in that space of wonder and childlikeness, which I thought was really beautiful because it's such a hard thing to hold on to. And we see her contrasted up against her friends like Tony and Dominic and what was it, Janae? the girls with the J names.
Oh, yes.
But we see the them J's. At a diner. You know, we see Janae at a diner in one scene, and she's talking to Adina, and she's like, "We had such great times, and you haven't changed at all." And Adina's like, "Our times were horrible, actually."
Right.
And right. Janae just very, like, blasé, really, like, goes over. And she's like, "Okay, well, it was so nice to see you." Because she has stepped into adulthood, which is, you know, the smoothing over of awkward interaction and, like, the sort of settling into dishonesty as a mode of communication.
That's very real. And I think it kind of speaks to another voicemail we got from Allie in Germany.
I keep thinking about the more fabulous elements, this whole sort of idea of being an alien and the fax machine. I just, like, so clever and interesting. And it kind of hovers around this tension of it being a metaphor for adolescence, but also maybe the potential for it to be, like, really fabulous. I think there's just a way in which it adds sort of a depth of feeling to this idea and sort of something magical or supernatural to just the everyday life experience of being a young person.
I think so often what happens with adulthood also is that we just, you know, we don't believe in magic anymore, right? We don't pay attention to the little interesting things. So I think that really speaks to that too.
There's one point where, what does she say? She no longer believes in her superiors. And that coincides with the point in the book where she's grieving. And she's lost a lot of her faith in life. And I thought that was such a beautiful metaphor for the ways, like, magic can leave us, especially when hard things happen. We no longer want to believe in the little coincidences that make life special.
Yes, that's really beautifully put, too.
It felt like a real heartbreak, the loss of faith in the superiors. It felt to me like the moment when you... when there's no part of your imagination that will speak to you anymore. And I didn't think of them as imaginary or not imaginary. It really didn't matter to me. It was more just that feeling of, like, when the part that keeps you alive and in a sense of enticement with the world and a sense of connection with the world, when that withers, which I think we all probably go through many times in our adulthood, but it's so sharp. And it's so specific. And I really felt that in the book as well. Mm.
So Mira, I think you just answered this question, but I was curious if either of you wondered if Adina wasn't actually an alien and was just delusional, or if that wasn't a thing you even needed to think about because you were just along for the ride.
To me, when you enter a book, you're entering, like, a pact with the writer, and it's almost like a quantum experience where all things could be true at once. And you're supposed to, like, sit in that space where multiple reading can take place. And so for me, that delight between the push and pull of, is she an alien or is this delusional? It didn't concern me, but it did enrich the experience. And I didn't feel pressure to sort of land on one side or the other because both felt true at once. Everyone around her thought she was delusional, and she thought that she was an alien. So in a sense, we're kind of, it mirrors the internal reality versus external reality that all of us sort of navigate every day.
Mm.
And also just craft-wise, it's a really smart use of that pact, mm-hmm. because there's a part of you that's sort of propelled forward by the idea of like, will I figure this out? And there's another part of you that's like, you will never figure this out. That is not, in fact, why you are reading. You know what I mean? Like you're actively in conversation with yourself, even as you're moving through it. And so it's an incredibly deft use of that space, right? It's an incredibly deft use of that, of the sort of our need for simplicity and our need for reduction and our sort of counterbalancing, like you will never be satisfied if that's what you are looking for from this world. And it felt really lovely, actually, the way that unfolded.
Yeah, I thought so, too. It's funny how like stressed out I got when she actually published the book and became like, because I think there is such a purity to it when it's just sort of like self-contained. But then once she put it out there, I was like, oh, God, this could get really ugly, you know?
For sure. And also plot-wise, what else could have possibly happened?
Right. Yes. Yeah. I think it was funny to like, at first I was like, oh no, this is not what I wanted to have happen. But then it's like, no, of course this is what needed to happen. I thought that was a really interesting turn. Did that strike you too, Molly?
Yeah. You know, the meta narrative elements of the text were the decision that surprised me the most. So that when we got into the part where Adina was writing a book about aliens and publishing a book about aliens and sort of navigating other people's expectations of her, I was really surprised by that sort of authorial choice. And at first I was resistant to it because I can think meta narratives can be really hard to pull off. But I do believe that because Adina's character is so internal, is so awkward in a way, is so self-reflective, that it actually really helped bring the book to a sort of really satisfying conclusion, especially with the arc that her friend Tony went through at the same time.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Let's hear another voicemail. This one is from Kali in Philadelphia, who wanted to share her favorite line from the book.
It comes towards the end of the book when Adina is addressing a larger audience for the first time about her work. And she says, "My deepest loves and sadnesses fell outside the realm of articulation and never reached the fax machine." And for some reason, that line was just so perfect to me. It really encompasses trying to express life to people, and specifically your life, your loves, your sadnesses. The words are always going to fall short, even if they are well put together. And I just thought that line said everything to me.
Gorgeous. Kali, I loved that.
I love that line.
Yes, yes. So Becky also shared one of her favorite lines. This is Becky in Connecticut.
There were so many incredible observations that she makes throughout the book. And two of my favorites were, adulthood seems like a years-long equation to beat traffic. And anyone questioning whether God exists need only consider the brevity of a dog's lifespan. In that second quote's vein, I am not someone who is easily affected by books, but this book made me absolutely sob in the last third or so. It is at times so incredibly funny, but also seeing the isolation and grief that Adina experiences throughout her life was really difficult, but felt very real.
I just thought that was gorgeous. Even hearing that voicemail, I was like, am I about to start crying?
I know, you could feel her emotion through.
Yes.
I know exactly. I could feel exactly what scene she was thinking of. God, with the freezer. I don't know if that's what you guys immediately went to.
Yes.
That's where I went.
Yes.
That scene really hurt. That scene hit me.
Yeah. 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 That was a tough one for sure.
Do we need to explain it all, that scene, or not really, not for the pro? I mean, I feel like I mean, really, like, we're all like vibing. We're like the freezer scene.
I guess I could just spoiler it all. Okay.
Yep.
If anyone's been coasting, without wanting to know. Now is the time to dip out and read the ending and come back.
Very gracious of you, Molly.
Right before her best friend dies, her dog dies. And that parallel of grieving and the way she handles her passing and puts her in the freezer to keep her, and then goes to the bodega and buys her flowers so that when she's getting cremated, she's only 5 pounds and she can be carried to the cremation site in a bed of daisies. It was just so beautiful and really captured like the type of love that we can have for other species that isn't written about a lot in books. Most books are really about human and human relationships, but this book really like we're expansive about sort of the relationships we can have with the animals around us and how meaningful they are to our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes me think of that, the sentence too, about after the death of her friend that she sends via fax machine that says, when someone dies, where does the way they eat egg rolls go? Which just gutted me, gutted me.
I was thinking about the resistance to that people have to writing about connections that they have with animals. And I feel like there's so many times where it's just like that sort of extraordinarily cheesy thing that doesn't actually nail the true feeling at all. Right. It's just, it's like watching a rom-com, but like starring an animal. It's you know what I mean? It's like, this is not what this is. This connection is not this. It is not this sort of overblown dramatic thing. And also it like rips out the deepest, the deepest, most tender part of your heart. So I really just love that was given the respect that kind of grief has. I love that it wasn't made light of and it wasn't treated as secondary. It was like, this is actually just crushing. And I feel like anyone who has that relationship with animals, which I do feel like is probably most of us.
I think so.
Like feels that in the meat of their heart, like feels the trueness of that, you know?
Yeah. I think I was just talking to a friend last night who was telling me about her dog, and she was like, oh yeah, she's my soulmate. And I loved it, you know, because I think there is something so deep about that love you can have for a pet. There's just really nothing like it.
So special. And you carry them with you when you go other places. And I feel like, you know, that was one of the first relationships Adina had that she felt safe and completely being herself.
So when I had Marie on, I did ask her a spoilery question around the ending of the book and whether when it came to, and I forget exactly how she had phrased it, but she was sort of like, it's not, or maybe she had said initially she wrote a very sad ending. And I was like, what do you think this one is? Because I think there is some hope to it, but it's also, you know, I mean, at surface level, Adina is dying by suicide, right?
Right.
I mean, like, that's what happens in this book. So it's really interesting to ask her about it. I'd love to listen to that, and then we can talk about that a little before we go.
There was one ending before the real one, and I will just say that it was extremely dark. It wasn't open-ended. It very much was Adina deciding to not be on the earth anymore as a result of her depression over her loss. I was kind of letting my real life affect the ending too much, to be honest. I was really sad. I had lost my friend Adina. I had encountered several other losses that year. However, the more and more I thought of it, thought through it, thought around it, I realized that actually what had happened to Mimi and what I thought would happen to her would be that she would put one foot in front of the other, move through it, not denying any of the sadness and depression she was in. But I wondered if I could get her to the other side that would feel appropriate and like something I hadn't seen in literature, where in a pedestrian, quotidian way, she makes it to a more solid place and is able to then fall not and again maybe fall back in love with the world a little bit, and then make her own decision to deactivate, not out of pure raw emotion, but out of sense of duty and sense of responsibility.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Isn't it gorgeous? I mean, I think she totally pulled that off.
I think she succeeded. Absolutely.
So sorry, I was listening to that and I just went to the deeply friend place.
Oh, sweetie.
And it's like beautiful. It's beautiful.
It is.
It's a beautiful sentiment. And also because she said, she says very clearly in the interview that there was a sort of darkness that she was responding to in her own life. I will just say it is like a really wonderful joy and incredible privilege to see a friend that you've known both as a creator and as a human write their way out of a place. And I wouldn't even say out of it, just like write that place.
Yeah.
So specifically. And I do agree that there is something beautifully transcendent in the end. And this is where, like, for me, the meta sort of folds in on the story, and there's sort of this origami that is like right in my hands as I'm trying to tell you about this, listening to her talk about the layers that she went through to write that ending. It's really, it just feels like, I feel so lucky. Mm. I feel so lucky when we get to see a friend do something like this with that feeling.
That's really beautiful sentiment, Mira.
You know,
okay, sorry.
No. I was going to say, Mira, something that emotions. Struck me
sorry.
Okay. About the book was reading the acknowledgement, actually, and seeing that Marie had lost someone in her life named Adina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that really hit me. I mean, grief is such a bitch. It's just horrible. And to watch your friend grieving is so hard. So I can't imagine what you must be feeling right now.
Well, you know, I mean, I will just say, like, there's also, like, so it, Adina Talv Goodman, who she was writing about, is somebody that did so much for the writing community in New York, and just was just a bright, bright light. For so many of us and for so many writers. And so there is also something really, it just makes sense in the way that few things in the universe do. It makes sense that this is the book that shines a light back on her. Right.
Yeah. What, like, an amazing gift.
Yeah. It just sort of makes, and it makes sort of this beautiful sense.
Ooh. Today is a tearful day, my friends. Oh my gosh. Okay, so I would love for us to do our very silly and completely arbitrary rating system on this one. And we're thinking fax machines.
Okay.
So between like 1 and 100 fax machines, how many would you give this book, Molly?
Okay, well, see, my brain immediately is like, I think fax machines are bad.
I know. That's fair. Maybe it's not ideal for this one.
I would say I would give this book 100 fax machines. I would read it again. I love the experience. I think every book is a unique experience that can never be rehad. You can only have it once. And this book was a really special experience that I got to have over the course of time of reading it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you got to have it. What do you think, Mira?
Okay, I guess I'm also going to have to give it 100 fax machines to the power of egg roll, because
yes.
I feel like it
ooh,
just...
Ooh, I love that. Perfect.
It has to live in that space.
Yes.
Where that unquantifiably just fantastic space where you got exactly what you needed and you didn't even know what you came in for.
Ooh, I love that. You can't fax an egg roll, but if you could... You're that weird. Would be magical.
Or can you? Okay.
So my last question for each of you is what recommendations you may have for Maybe ideally books, but honestly, this could be anything at all from like a TV show or a song, but something that you think is really like would resonate nicely with Beautyland for someone who's like, I would like more of this beautiful egg roll feeling in my life.
I was thinking, people should pick up Parakeet because it's one of my favorite books. It's one of Marie's earlier books and it's just really beautiful and strange. But I was also thinking of Hilary Leichter's work and how when you're reading it, it also feels like a narrative poem that's just bringing you along through very strange interactions and moments in the world to sort of bring you to the other side where understanding is greater and bigger and more unfathomable than you could have ever anticipated.
Wow, that's gorgeous. I haven't read her.
Oh, you have to. You must. I love Great. Temporary. That's my favorite. But her book, Terrace Story, that also just came out, is really good.
Okay, that's wonderful. I'm excited to have some homework now. Mira, what do you think?
I would recommend the works of Liana Fink, who is a cartoonist and author. She does beautiful graphic books. One that I particularly enjoy is called Passing for Human. And there's a really sort of, there's something that's really the thing that I most enjoy about her writing is she does live on the peripheries in the same way that this character does. And the way that she writes from that portion of her life, it both connects and disconnects me. And so it's that beautiful feeling of feeling the borders of your own humanity and where they sort of meet up with someone's and where, and also feeling out the chasms, which I also frankly enjoy, right? Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I will say just about her art and specifically her lines is that, and you'll understand this when you look at her work, her lines make more emotional sense than almost anything I've ever seen. And the things that she will do with a line and the ways that she will create character and the ways in which there's such a confidence behind her style feels sort of masterful. So, yeah.
Mm. That's a great recommendation. I think the one that came to mind for me, which it hasn't actually come out yet. I think it comes out in June or July. I'll have to double check that. But it's Ruphie Thorpe's newest novel called Margot's Got Money Troubles. And I feel like I always say this about the books I recommend during book club, but it's very different. But also, I think there's a similar palette in terms of like looking squarely at the messiness of things, but coming out on the other side just like fully loving and enthusiastic and excited to make art, which I just think is really beautiful and refreshing. And I think I probably would have chosen it for a book club book for later this summer if we were doing book club later this summer. So I'm also excited to have the excuse to just shout it out right this second. So here we are.
I'm going to miss your book club choices. I always read them.
Oh, Molly, you're so sweet. Thank you. Well, hopefully we'll live on in some other iteration or we'll join the light and that'll be okay too. Well, thank you both so much for showing up in such a beautiful way to discuss this book. I really appreciate both of you and your insights and your honesty. And it was just really lovely. So thank you both.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
All right, that's it for this month. Thank you, as always, for listening and reading along. And of course, an extra special bonus thanks to Erin, Cassandra, Anne, Allie, Kali, Becky, Liz, and Sarah for all chiming in with your thoughts about Beautyland. I am so glad that y'all liked this book as much as I did. Our May selection is Amor Towles' new short story collection. It is called A Table for Two, so snap that up, and we can't wait to hear what you think of that one as well. Nerdette is produced by me and Anna Bauman at WBEZ in Chicago, and our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak. We will see you on Friday.